Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following program, Flame On, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic and nerd destination, where you can see me probably crying in a corner, and with generous support from listeners like you. To learn how you can support other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I'm Brian. I'm here with everyone on the show, at least on a regular basis. Going around clockwise, Pat is here.
What's going on?
Oral.
So on time.
You are. Jared.
Hi.
Hi. BJ.
I'm day drinking.
Don't you always? Isn't that a thing?
It's 4 o'clock. After 4 o'clock, yeah.
And Jeff.
Hi, guys.
So we're all here, and oh my God, we've been really busy. Between Dragons and New Spandex, Recaps, Adventures in New York City, Almost Adventures in Atlanta for Westworld, we'll talk about. And so, BJ's had a birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, happy belated.
So we had Adventures.
I turned 28.
Brunch.
Ha! I'm sorry.
I'm like, wait a minute.
Hang on.
That's not accurate.
I mean, I saw the laugh coming. I didn't expect it to be quite so guffaw.
Mathematically, that doesn't check out.
No.
Well, we've been busy, so but we're here to give you a jam-packed episode. I almost said issue. I always want to say issue because it's like a comic book, but it's not. Of mostly, well, pop culture, but mostly today television, because there's a lot of new TV out.
So much.
So much TV that it's kind of dominating, I think, most of our time.
Wait a minute. We're drinking pumpkin beer. Are the leaves changing? It looks like fall.
This is Florida, but they don't. Really.
Some of them do.
Some of them do.
Looks like
yes,
a delusion.
We are drinking Dogfish Pumpkin Ale.
Pumpkin.
Very happy that this is it's pumpkin.
This is what waspy white girls drink with
yes,
the
PSLs. Yes, we are basic bitches drinking pumpkin ale.
Yep.
Even Oral's drinking pumpkin ale. It's good though. It is good, right?
No, it's not too shabby.
This is first. It's in a growler. They actually had it at ABC. I'm very happy. Usually, I only get this on tap up in DC at the Dogfish Ale House, which is an amazing place. But that's not what we're here for. We're here to talk. Mostly television, a little bit of comics, a little bit of adventures. We'll start with, in the comics world at least, and in our personal lives, at least Pat and I, one of the biggest things in like our year, which is our trip to New York for New York Comic Con, as I get looks of daggers at me.
They're not daggers.
They're not daggers?
They're not daggers.
I can never tell with you, though. They kind of look daggerish.
Understandable.
So Pat and I went to New York. We do this now. It's the third year we've done this. Around New York Comic Con, both for the con, of course, and for... more than both, our live show or things we're involved in, and Pat's family.
The one time you let me go home.
What is this, I let you? What is that? No, we.
My indentured servitude allows me one vacation per year.
Wait, he took the ankle bracelet off?
No,
they leave that on.
It's like a little cover you put over it so it doesn't
register. If he gets too far, it shocks him.
That's a different thing. No, this was fun. I mean, it's great. Pack and see his family. We get to go up to Long Island, which feels like home. If you ever have a chance, have you been to Long Island?
I've never been to Long Island.
Those of us from South Florida, I think we feel at home when we go up there. It's just
because it's batshit crazy,
and it's very New York, which is South Florida, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Without gators up there.
When
anyway,
when you get sick of snow and cold weather, you just move to Florida and keep doing what you're doing.
But it's
not wrong.
No.
It's no, that's absolutely not why I moved down, but I miss it. I miss snow. I miss.
I mean the old
seasons.
People. I mean the old people.
I miss being able to wear shorts and a t-shirt and not sweat my ass off. Because the weather was gorgeous.
It was
absolutely gorgeous.
60s, beautiful. Went to the city on Tuesday. We had our live fan feud show at Rock Bar, which is available in the feed probably like two episodes back from this. And we had such an amazing time. The people who came out, we had Bill Zanowitz, Chris Cummins, Joshua Yale of Flame On fan fame.
Well, he's on the wrong coast.
He is. Well, he's actually in Florida right now. He's down the street.
And he's not here?
No, he had things to do.
Hmm. He's not on the show no more.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, well, someday you'll meet him.
It's a good question.
And we had Ariel Italic, a local drag queen and fellow RuPaul commentator.
Yes.
And most, like, oh my God, I can't believe we got her, Ophira Eisenberg.
Yay.
From Ask Me Another, NPR's pop culture game show, whatever they're called.
I have a question. When her car service pulled up to the front, were you just in awe? Yes.
I mean, we had to stop and they had to roll out a red carpet, and, you know, it was great. Paparazzi lined the streets of New York. It was good times.
So we had a fantastic show. And again, it's a live video. It's up on YouTube. You can watch the video and audio. And then if you want to just listen to it, it's up on our feed. We also went to
Or if you really want to hear it, you can play the audio and try to make sure you like try to play it at the right exact moment. Because the audio in our feed is actually a lot louder.
And you doctored
it. We ran into some issues. I didn't doctor it.
Some slight issues.
No.
It just sounded weird.
It was interesting. We tried this. It was our first attempt at doing a full live stream.
Thanks to Ron for watching it, at least. We know he was watching it. Because he said something during the feed, which is always nice.
Yep.
But it was a little low. We're working on, obviously, trying to get those issues fixed, because this is going to be fun, and we're going to get to do some more video with this podcast.
Yep. Well, now Facebook's got a built-in live stream.
Well, we did
all
that.
Of my friends are Facebook live streaming.
Well, we actually
now.
Did that at the Nintendo store, Pat and I, before the event to sort of promote it.
So. Okay.
Feel free if you have page access. You know, it's a lot of fun. No, but then we did go to New York Comic Con on Thursday, which is always a whirlwind day because the con is huge, right? It's the second largest. Some say it's the largest. I don't know all the details, but it's up there in San
Javits
Diego.
Center?
In the Javits Center.
I like
correct.
Saying Javits.
It's odd. But we.
I don't think this year there'll be any claims of it being bigger than San Diego.
No, probably not.
No,
although
it was a more intimate affair.
It didn't feel small. It just didn't feel as busy.
No, it was not as busy. Last year on Thursday, it felt like, and even talking to some of our friends who were vendors there. Thursday was like Friday last year. This year, definitely a Thursday.
I heard Sunday was really busy, though.
I'm sure.
I talked to Dan Parent, and he said that it was slammed on Sunday.
Yeah,
so.
But Thursday was nice because last year felt like a convention. I get a little
claustrophobic.
Yeah, and I don't like when people start running around and pushing into me. And this year, we were actually able to maneuver quite nicely through both the convention floor and Artist Alley without any real major issues.
We saw, again, talk about Dan Parent promoting his Die Kitty Die Kickstarter. We have an interview coming with him very soon about that. If you are interested, there is a second volume, and that's what they're kickstarting right now. And it is doing very well, so you have a chance to get it, which is awesome. We saw Ryan Brown, who got an Ashcan copy of Curse Words from him and Charles Soule, which is a new Image book coming out next year. We did not get to go to the Wizards party, which I'm still sad about. Where evidently Charles Soule played in a wizard band that he is part of, which would have been exciting. Briefly saw Janet Leigh, and they just announced another volume of Return to the Dapper Men, which is her series with, oh my God, I can't remember. I'll think of it in a minute. We saw, let's see, who else did we see? I waved at Amy Chu. She had a crowd. I couldn't talk to her. It was sad.
Is that the one with the really great vegetarian meals? The Asian vegetarian meal?
Oh, wow.
Is that not...
That sounds racist?
No!
Is there an Amy Chu thing? All I know is her as a writer.
Her frozen meals.
She is
delicious.
An amazing writer. She did the...
get it? It's a double entendre because, you know, her last name is Chu and you chew the food.
But
she did the Poison Ivy miniseries recently. And she's writing Red Sonja coming up.
Yes.
In addition to some other stuff. So she's really cool. Gosh, who else did we see?
Jamie Faye, Rich Bernatovich, and Luciano
Pavarotti?
Yes. I can't remember Luciano's last name. We saw Danny Haas. We met...
we see him more at conventions than we do in Orlando.
Girl, that's the only time I get to see and talk to him. It feels like the only time I get anything done is when we're there. We made a couple of new friends. We walked the artist alley with Dave Fabricant, who reports for Us Weekly. He was
lovely, lovely person,
fantastic guy. We met him at Rock Bar during game night. He's a friend of Jason, who was our point person and helped us out tremendously.
Yes, thank you very much to Jason and everybody at Rock Bar. It really made it a lot easier to deal with good people.
And it was lots of good people. We got some fun art.
We did. We got to go to the panel where Peter David said some crazy things. Did you guys hear about that?
Yes.
He didn't say crazy things.
It is crazy.
He gave a very crazy anecdote and got very emphatic.
So there was basically, and this is up on Bleeding Cool, and you can read about it more if you go to our Facebook, there was a Romani activist that came up and asked a question of Peter David, and was basically, why are the Romani demonized in not only comics, but in just general? Is there an editorial mandate against the Romani people? And they use the G word, gypsy, and, you know, that's a pejorative, and all this stuff. And Peter David was rather pissed off that he was being asked this question at an LGBT X-Men panel, which it was, brought to us by Times Out, our friend Jude and Jamie up at Times Out. And he got really pissed and shared an anecdote of some really awful things he witnessed in Romania.
Yeah, he was in Romania working on a film, and he saw a woman with her child dragging itself by its bottom through the street, and its legs were turned up at the knee. And he asked the person that he was with, the tour guide or whoever kind of was their liaison there, he asked what the deal was, and the person said, well, the Romani tend to break their children's legs at the knees because it makes them better beggars. So he was very much shocked, appalled, and outraged by this. So when this question came up, and to be fair, no one really has any semblance of what the actual full question was, because I think everybody kind of fell asleep during it.
It was a little of a
very heavy accent. A lot of lead up to what the question was that you kind of checked out. Talked about the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. Talked about Doctor Doom being a fascist leader in
Latveria.
And like all of these things. And it's just kind of like, it was almost like you lost where this question was going. So
swerve to Romani was
Next thing I know, I zoned out. I was like, I have no idea what this guy's talking about. Next thing I know is I hear Peter David going, you don't want me to answer that question. I'm like, What happened?
Yeah, it was very...
And we were awake from there on!
Yep. And a lot of people online were very quick to use the R word against Peter David, calling him a racist.
I love when you're like, you use the letter, you're like, the G word, gypsy. Well,
I don't... Yeah,
R word, racist.
I'm being careful. Listen.
Are the Romani a race?
No.
It's more of a locational...
It's a religious ethnic group.
Yeah. Okay, that's a fair title.
I guess I just have a hard time. Peter David has been a huge part of the community, LGBT community. Not that he's gay, but just writing gay characters. He's the one who wrote that Shatterstar and Richter had a relationship. Before that, he had mixed race couples in his writing. I mean, he is a progressive writer, and he had a horrible experience in this country, and for whatever reason, he then used that in his writing. But if you go on Bleeding Cool, he actually responded to the allegations and talked about how Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are not like villains. I mean, they were a villain when they were created way back, but he didn't write them as villains at all. Like, he wrote them as powerful, liberated, like, members of society.
And
so
considering I've been reading Scarlet Witch, I don't feel like there is any vilification of the Romani people.
No.
And I'm sure in other books or other things in the past there have been. I don't know how much is geared towards the Romani right this second outside of that one book, but she's on like this quest to like find herself,
totally,
and it's very much about like it almost shines more of a light on what like this whole kind of group is versus right. like saying that these are they're
terrible people.
Beggars and you know yeah. like shysters con artists
and, yeah, yeah. And it's more of the stereotyping, not necessarily a villain role, but more stereotyping. Dude, which is
here's where I think he missed that, because I've read multiple articles, and anytime you use an anecdote as like your defense
or yes, your baseline
you,
of
yeah, you, identification, you've already like yes. boxed yourself in.
Correct.
And so it's like saying, you know, here are these two black characters, and you know, like, what about depictions of black people? And you know, you're asking in a very pointed way, and your response is, well, I once saw, you know, two drug dealers shoot themselves in the street.
Sure.
Therefore, you know, you don't want to ask me this question because I know how. And what you're insinuating is, I know how black people interact with each other.
Yeah.
I have seen it. Therefore, I'm somewhat an authority, even if he hasn't said that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I think he handled it poorly.
Yes, I agree completely.
And I think the criticism of his response are for the most part fair. Because no matter what you've done in your writing, in your past, like, yes, you have a foundation on which to stand on. You can say, like, I've never really I personally feel like I haven't portrayed, you know, these individuals as caricatures of the Romani people. But when you, like, as of, like, a week ago, say this really charged...
Yeah.
Like,
this is kind of
closed-minded justification.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we supposed to say? How are you supposed to react? I'm not saying that he's a racist.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't there.
Right.
I can only interpret from what I've read. But I could have told you, as literally, I can imagine Peter David's publicist just breaking open the bottle of whiskey and just taking it to the head.
I absolutely understand your point. I think, like, the CBR article that first came out was fair. I haven't read any subsequent ones. But when people jump to call him a racist right off the bat, I think that's unfair. That was the only part. If you want to turn around and say, everything you've said, I absolutely agree with.
Yeah, I do too.
But the only thing that I think was a little off on it was that it should have been a matter of how you said it. Like, using an anecdote shouldn't be how you defend this question. You should answer this question, or you should be able to do this, rather than say, Peter David's a racist because he freaked out and had gave this anecdote story. That's where I feel it's a little off. The way you put it right there, if that's how it had come out right afterwards, I'd be like, shit, you know what? 100%.
Yeah, and I agree. Absolutely agree. I totally agree. It was the level of response, and I guess this guy had come to a previous panel. I don't know if it was of his, but the write-up actually talked about this guy going around in different panels and bringing the same thing up. So, like, it was in the ether already.
Yeah.
I don't know if that fed into Peter David's, like, reaction. It was really weird because it seemed so disproportionate. Because the activist guy, his background is, he wasn't, like, mad. It was very sort of, like, monotonous. So it was a very disproportionate level. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Absolutely. One anecdote does not paint in any way, shape, or form an accurate picture of a group, which isn't even just Romani, or in Romania. Romani are all over the world.
Yeah.
That tribe, they bifurcated into all the different countries. I mean, the Riches was a story about Romani in America.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me that group of people in America break their... No, of course not. That's stupid.
Like, and in Hemlock Grove, they were werewolves.
Yeah. So I guess what Pat was saying is right kind of where right? I come from to some extent. I feel that the instant jump to demonizing and putting a pejorative, again, about, you know, pejorative, I guess, it's saying he's a racist about it. It oversimplifies it, and it reduces the conversation down to name-calling. And that's not important. What's important is, I think you're right, criticizing the remarks and then having a conversation about, like, what we're doing.
Yeah, and you know, when... I feel as if sometimes when white people hear the word racist, it's like we've slapped you in the face. And it, you know, there are different degrees of racism.
Sure.
Like there's a difference between prejudice and racism, like institutional racism. And you know, for example, remember when Rick Remender wrote the second volume of Uncanny Avengers, and Havoc's like, you know, or it might have been the first one. I can't remember.
And the M-word?
Yeah, yep. Like the M-word. He's like, if you don't understand this and you don't understand what I'm trying to convey, go drown yourself in hobo piss. And I'm just like, no, what you're trying to convey is offensive. It's inappropriate. And while I see what you're doing and I understand your mindset, like, that comes across as racist. And you may not be racist. Your ideas may be racist.
So it's the remarks being racist, not the person.
Yeah. Okay. And so, like, you know, racism is pernicious. It's
contextual.
It's contextual. Sometimes it's very minute. Sometimes it's super blatant. And people shouldn't shy away when they hear you're being racist.
Sure.
Because that is a moment where you can stop and examine and see where you come out on the other end.
And educate.
Well, and that's, I think, the biggest drop-off is a lot of people will never go back to a person once they hear a comment and they've interpreted it. They'll never go back to the person and go, wait, I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. Could you please explain what you just said? So that they don't think they misinterpreted it.
Right.
A lot of times they'll just take it, this is what was said, this is how I took it, so this is what I'm going to say
back.
Well,
it's the internet comment game. It's no, no progress from mankind is going to be solved on the internet through comments.
And now with a 140 character limit.
Well, that too. But I mean, like, yet, because like you're saying, there's no empathy, there's no, wait, let me make sure I understand what you're saying. It's just response. And I'm guilty of it, I know, in social or political Facebook comments. I know a lot of people get into that trap and become just like these argument machines. And,
well,
it's
the best part, especially when you're talking about that, is how many varied ways you can interpret text.
Oh, well, yeah, because there's no thing. But in this case, the guy's text, I mean, he was mad. Like, there was no question he reacted. And he has since kind of backed that down a bit. I don't know that he apologized. And again, the Bleeding Cool interview of Peter David is really informative from Peter David's perspective. But, you know, I felt kind of – I saw some people reacting very quickly after the event. And the thing I was I did not enjoy was seeing his name being called racist. Not his comments. That was there too. But literally there were some people who we're in the gay geek community together, let's just say, that absolutely posted he is a racist. That was my problem.
Which is – not to play devil's advocate and undermine what I said. But sometimes – when you say racist shit, you are racist.
It's true.
Sometimes you are.
And you know, like, it might be in that moment, in that reasoning where he said something. And, like, that's the thing. Like, I reread his words so often. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, that's some racist, stereotypical bullshit.
Yeah, stereotypical.
And that's,
definitely.
That's not fair to use this as your defense.
No.
And in that instance, I can't defend him.
But the problem was that it wasn't a defense. It was such an odd entire exchange. It was a matter of, like, this question is asked, and, you know, the exact wording of the question, I don't know. Him basically just saying, you don't want me to answer that, and then giving this anecdote, and then shutting him down completely. Again, there could be more to their interaction, their dynamic over the course of the day, over the course of time, whatever the case is, but it wasn't like, I write this because I will tell you why I write it this way. I will tell you this story.
Yeah.
That absolutely is a stereotypical defense of your writing or what you're saying. But when it basically, like, it was almost like crazy old man just yelling out random shit.
There was a lot of that in this panel. I want to paint the picture a little bit. So it was Chris Claremont.
Oh, God.
Crazy old man. Peter David, increasingly older and crazier man. Danny Ketchum, Marvel X-Men editor. Mm-hmm. Very nice, attractive Asian man, I found. Max Wittert. From Jean Grey and Cyclops.
Scott and Jean, yeah.
Scott and Jean, the webcomic, and then he was in Strange... they did, like, Strange Thing. What was it? Anthology series. Anyway.
X-Men number 25 he was in.
Oh, and he did that for Bendis, yeah. And it was just odd because you had these two younger gay comic professionals and these two older heterosexual comic professionals who have contributed to the gay thing. And the dialogue was very just odd, crazy anecdote, more relevant to the question. It was just all over the place.
If there was a question, it felt like where people talk about the debates and questions weren't answered. Because, and it felt the same way here. A question would be asked, and it was about LGBT-ness in this writing, and then it would be this whole other conversation. Yeah. And then you're like, where did we go? I'm still over here waiting for an answer to that.
Your segues suck.
It was awkward.
Jude, as a moderator, and I love her to death, she's very out of the way. Like, she'll just put the thing out there.
She throws the question in and then is like, all right, you guys go for it.
She doesn't try to keep a conversation going.
Pull the pin, throw the grenade.
Pretty much. And it's very different from what I consider my style or other people's.
And she's soft-spoken, which is tough when you're in a room full of guys that are louder than the next.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So then you got super gay Max, who's just like, I'm not quite sure why I'm here, but hey, I'm here, I'm queer, get used to it. Like,
she's just there to dodge the splashback. That's pretty much what's happening.
She's splashing in her own pool. She's like, I will show you how to download stuff, illegally later.
Oh, she
first Claremont, whatever. Like, it was weird.
It was an odd panel that ended really oddly with that whole thing. But I'm glad we had a discussion about it. Again, there's great resources online to talk about this. But we want to share that a personal experience. And then the rest of the show is like, we went to our friend Bill and Chris's toys, Tales from the Toy Box back at Rock Bar. That was fun. I didn't get to stay the whole night. We went to the Big Gay Ice Cream Place, which
Gay Ice Cream Shop.
Yeah, that was fun.
Delightful.
And it was great. So New York's great. Next year, maybe we'll do some more with the Read Pop people. We really enjoy working with them. I'd love to get more of us up there, so we'll see what we can do. And that was New York Comic Con for us. So we are going to move on. We have, like I said, a lot of television. And we're going to actually do a thing where we kind of talk. Like, each person's got their own shows they're following, and then we can sort of pile on. But let's do one each and see where we're at, and then maybe we'll come back around for a second pass. So favorite show, I don't want to start. I'll let Pat start.
I'll take the elephant in the room. S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, we've gone through this.
That's your favorite show?
I'm actually, I don't watch a lot of television overall. Mm. And stuff I do watch, I sometimes just watch because I'm a completionist and I hate watch things. Like, that's why Supergirl is now on my DVR, because CW pulled all their shit off of Hulu. So I was like, ooh, good. I don't have to DVR this. I can just watch it on Hulu. Nope, not going to happen. So
you got to download the CW Seed app.
I'm good.
I read up a lot on that, and when we get around to me, I'll give the deets on that nonsense.
That's fine.
Their new logo, we defy. Apparently, Hulu is who they're defying.
Apparently. Honestly, when it comes down to it, I don't care if they pull their shit. We still have it on our DVR. Cool. But S.H.I.E.L.D. has always kind of been one of those shows. We're now in, what, season four? Three? Four?
Four sounds close.
I think we're four.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Yeah, four.
Can't even use, season finales as a good demarcation line, because they were always so uneventful.
Well, it was...
until the last one.
Because you had Deathlok, intro of the Inhumans, and now Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah. It always started out slow, and it kind of needed to find its footing. And I think when they announced Ghost Rider, people were like, okay, a name we might know. Most of the time, it's because of Nicolas Cage and Johnny Blaze.
I'm Ghost Rider.
And, I think this time around, I was expecting them to build to Ghost Rider.
They
always do.
Ghost Rider.
They build to Deathlok. They build to the Inhumans. They build to all of this. Episode one... 5 minutes in,
right out the gate.
They didn't bury the lead.
They came out of the gate swinging, and while I don't think it is the best show, 100%, the most amazing. No, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think that they've found themselves a footing that works for the show. I think the 10 o'clock time slot is better.
It's more violent.
The graphics for Ghost Rider are amazing.
They're pretty good.
Yep.
It's very true to the Reyes incarnation.
Well, and that's the thing. And actually, even after this last episode, it seems like they are blending Robbie Reyes and Johnny Blaze.
A little bit.
Because from what I've read of Robbie Reyes, he doesn't have a vengeance demon spirit. It's his serial killer uncle.
Which who they've referred to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is why I say it's a blend, because yeah. they in the show, they reference a vengeance demon.
Yeah. Just recently, yeah.
Yeah, in this last episode, I think it was.
Daisy makes a couple of off-candid comments.
And they mention the vengeance demon, and they mention his uncle, who is in jail, who he says did not do whatever the crime is. Whereas his uncle Eli in the comics was a serial killer and then possesses him. It's this whole kind of twisted,
it's almost like a Firestorm kind of deal, right?
Kind of, because they fight for control over who is in control. So to see a little bit of Blaze, where people know, okay, vengeance demons, you kind of get the motive for it a little bit more. But still having Uncle Eli involved and having like the Robbie Reyes aspect of it.
And no Nicolas Cage.
And no Nicolas Cage. No motorcycle. The was it a Charger?
Looks like it.
Yeah, it's a Charger.
Dodge Charger.
It's a sexy car.
It's popular in every show.
I like that.
Yeah.
Fast and the Furious, Supernatural, I think they all use a Charger.
That's pretty.
And the graphics are seriously on point. Like when the first episode of The Flash, when they did the whole tornado and the whole running, I was like, God damn, this is some cheesy-ass graphics. Like, it takes you out of that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And from the first time they showed Ghost Rider to the time where Robbie melted away and became Ghost Rider and there was Skull on fire, I was like, I know this is CGI, but it doesn't take me out of that moment. I just sit there and go, oh, shit.
I mean, they have the skin bubbling effect, too.
Yeah.
And they didn't do a typical, like, this is just a human skull. It's actually an over-exaggerated design. They have the etching on the skull everything.
It's very much a, like, a graffiti style. And it very much looks like the comic book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't just go with...
I don't remember the artist for that book, but it was...
Trotmore.
It was very distinct kind of style. Yeah, they're true to it. The show's great. Do you like the Inhuman director of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I'm still on the fence about that. This Patriot. Whole ghost storyline is still a little weird.
Who? That's who Jeffrey Mace
is.
He was a 40s character called the Patriot.
Yep.
So he was a proto Captain America.
Holy shit, I didn't
realize
that. He
actually became, I think, a Captain America after the whole Steve Rogers... Trapped in ice.
Wow, I didn't even catch that connection.
But
okay,
now they
cool.
made him an Inhuman and just kind of interwove.
Well, Inhumans are everywhere. Yeah. I love. Can I say the Yo-Yo character is one of my favorites?
I like that she's sassy.
She's sassy. She's got a cool power. It's a little Flash-like, and that she can kind of zoom in, do whatever.
She's Quicksilver.
Quicksilver.
They show the frozen time manipulation.
But I love.
No,
her
I
character.
Love when they don't. I love when absolutely it's just like. Like they just—it's almost like a flash of the screen, and then she's back, and she's like, "And I'm just dropping this in the plant here."
I also really am excited for what the direction they're taking Quake, and building up. I hope. I mean, they've promised this; they've sort of teased this, her Secret Avengers or Secret Warriors type thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like what could happen here is they could build out this secret team that S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't know about, even if it's got some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. people in it, to kind of just counter check whatever's going on in the S.H.I.E.L.D. going public and all that stuff. So I think the season's off to a weird start. I didn't love it at first, but I'm still invested in the characters. Of course, I'm going to watch it. It's great.
I think overall
the ghost thing is weird, but
I think overall they have a much better feel of themselves for this season, which they needed.
I am surprised they have kind of, they're touching on the whole like mysticism, spirits, ghost thing. Before the movies, because usually Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is very reactionary
to
the movies.
That's how they're built. Well, that's how they're going to get people invested before Strange comes out.
Exactly.
Because if you put that out there to the public, which whatever their viewership is, their market share is, the people who watch it and maybe don't know Strange will now have a little bit of this in the bank going into Doctor Strange, and it won't be completely new to them.
Yeah.
So
Oral.
Yeah.
What's your favorite show right now?
New show.
Or I guess returning show is fine.
You want returning or new?
Whatever, either way.
I'll go for new.
Okay.
So, and this is totally not what I thought I was going to say, NBC's The Good Place with Kristen Bell.
Mel
and Ted
loves
Danson.
That show. Yeah,
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Okay, so much fun.
Give us the elevator pitch because I saw Kristen Bell on Conan and I want to know more about.
Okay, so what it is that Kristen Bell's character wakes up and she has died. She died in this really embarrassing sort of way.
So she woke up and she died? She woke up and she realized she died?
She's like, where am I? And Ted Danson's like, hey, I need to tell you something. It's going to be very traumatic, but just calm down. You're dead.
She's dead like me.
Yeah. Except
it's all in the afterlife.
It's all the afterlife. So she is in the afterlife.
No way.
And this place is a utopia.
Okay.
It's a neighborhood where you get to live and you have your own house and it's tailored to, you know, whatever you've liked in life.
Or actually, and like the size of it is based on how many good deeds. Like basically it's how good of a person you are is the size ratio of the house.
Okay.
And so it's perfectly tailored to a group of people. So say there are like 400 people in this neighborhood. There are neighborhoods throughout the afterlife. And each and every person gets to live in a neighborhood that's best suited for them. You get to meet your soulmate. Everything is perfect because you were like the best of the best. Here's the catch. Mm-hmm. She is a terrible person.
Okay.
She is there by accident. There's been a mix-up.
Oh, nice.
And so if she made it to the good place and only the best get to the good place, there's the bad place. And she doesn't want to go there. And so she confides in her soulmate. It's like, hey, there's been a mistake. I don't deserve to be here. But I don't want to leave because the alternative is going to the bad place. And it's her trying to learn to be a good person in Nirvana.
Okay.
In heaven.
Is it fairly like played for the cheap seats, if you will?
No,
or is
it's
it satirical?
Not.
It's
very
like...
satirical.
Okay.
It's very character-driven.
Okay.
It's not really laugh-out-loud funny all the time.
Yep.
But it's just, you're just really, you want to see where this is going. Ted Danson is hilarious.
They actually, what's cool is they do spend time introducing other characters, and you find out more about, kind of like I've heard about Orange is the New Black, where like the show really grew when they actually started expounding on other characters' backstories. Same thing with The Good Place.
Or like Lost, if you will.
Sure.
And there's got another, you know, the other connection.
What network is it on?
NBC.
Okay.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's not going to be for everyone. I didn't think it was going to be for me, but I thoroughly enjoy
it. I love Kristen Bell to death. Mm-hmm. And I like Ted Danson a lot. Is he like another like higher-up angel or what's
his? They don't call him an angel. He's kind of like a facilitator.
They call him like the architect or something like that?
Yeah.
He's the one kind of, place.
He crafted this neighborhood for everyone. And everything is just insanely perfect. You can fly because who doesn't want to fly in the afterlife?
Of course, right?
It's fantastic. So
I love it. Jared, what about you? Have you watched television?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I know you're busy. Anything good?
Well, probably the only show that I've been keeping up with and not very well was American Horror Story, Roanoke, Blair Witch, My Nightmare.
All right, so I know, BJ, you're excited about this too.
I'm probably about 3 episodes in.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, so Pat and I just finished the most recent, so we're not going to spoil it for all of you, but let me just say... What are we on? Did we just finish 5?
You finished Hotel.
No.
Yeah. Oh, episode. Yeah, no, we just finished episode 5.
The arc of this season is surprising. I will just put that out there. It's not doing what I expected, and that's great. So please, tell me what you liked about it. Like, or what you liked about it.
Give me a moment.
Okay. Well, let me tell you the moment I actually started going, okay, because I've always been fascinated by Roanoke. I don't know. Our King's Academy Christian School history book, Roanoke was kind of surprisingly prominently featured, I think.
And there was a lot of stories that stand out when you get a lot of boring, same old stuff. Like, oh, there was a colony that up and vanished?
Right.
Well, what happened there?
Croatoan.
Yeah. Right. Croatoan. And then the meaning of that. And what this is kind of fan fiction-y. Let's try to figure what happened and we'll just make up our own thing. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. But what I also like is...
This is based on a real story.
Of course it is. What I also like is the way it's shot as a like true crime or unsolved mystery.
Yeah, that was
a docudrama.
That was interesting because you have the real-life people speaking, and then you have their actor portrayals as someone completely different. That was a little off-putting for the first two episodes
for
me.
It's weird, yeah. But it gives them a chance to just flex different muscles, have different actors.
I want to know how that conversation went when they all came back to read for their characters. Because generally speaking, the real-life people aren't as attractive as the dramatization.
Character
actor. So, how did that go between Sarah Paulson and everybody?
Although, if I were Lily Rabe, I'd be a little upset. Not that Sarah Paulson is unattractive. But I think Lily Rabe is more attractive.
Yes,
and then you get the other the sister. How the fuck did she get Angela Bassett to play her? How the fuck does that happen?
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall on that in that script read.
And it's just weird because Lily Rabe is the only one of like the long term cast that's on that side of the dramatization or like the real story part of it. So you get these newer characters that are like, okay, cool, like they're fine, they're, and then you get Lily Rabe and then Sarah Paulson as that same character. It felt that's the part that feels a little weird on that casting. I would rather three new people be these people and then have all of these other characters that we know be the dramatization because that's really where the meat of the story is, and we know these people already.
Yeah,
as different characters.
One question I had though was the Roanoke cult or whatever that was. Their diction is very peculiar.
Yes, there's a mix of Northern England and probably some other parts of England that I'm not sure about exactly. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place. And Kathy Bates' character is very pronounced, like Northern England.
Yes, because I remember she was saying Meyer and Mook.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, I love that, though, because I hate seeing Pilgrim-era stuff, or even, because that's pre-Pilgrim, right? And they're all very, like, American accents. Or, like, I just remember years ago seeing, like, some awful Pilgrim's Thanksgiving thing.
Well,
They're English. They should be sounding like they're English.
And
how about with a Russian played by a Scottish person? That was always the best part of Hunt for October.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and Roanoke supposedly was like a newer...
Yeah.
Like, these people were fresh off the boat, so Lord knows.
Right, it predates Virginia.
Which is another good show, by the way. Just
fresh off the boat?
Yeah.
Is that back?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's back.
Season
two.
Two.
We wanted to find Wong's from the Fresh Off the Boat fame. Wong's, what's it called? The House of Bow.
House of Bow.
New Netflix show coming this fall,
but we didn't get to it anyway.
Actually, it's a Vice show.
Back to Roanoke.
Wow's World.
Roanoke.
Back. Spin it on Roanoke.
Reel it back in.
I tried to make a joke.
But what I really enjoy, and you guys haven't quite got there, is some of the other characters in that world. But one that you have seen is Leslie Jordan's character. Cricket. Which, did Cricket show up? No. So Leslie Jordan played a witch in Coven.
Yeah.
Leslie Jordan, if you don't know, is a gay comedian.
Tiny gay man.
Sorted Lives is one of his big
Sorted
works.
Lives, both in the movie. He's been on Will and Grace multiple times as Beverly Leslie, for those older gays that know that.
Yes.
But every time I hear Cricket, I just think of Wanda Sykes from Will and Grace. When Karen wants to have a baby, so she decides that the girl at the makeup counter is going to be her surrogate, and it's Wanda Sykes, and her character is Cricket.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's been old forever.
So Leslie Jordan.
What I love about Leslie Jordan's character, have you seen where he is on his way out on an Uber?
No.
No, that's episode four. If you
haven't. I can't ruin it for you, but there is probably one of the best lines uttered from a gay character in a long time, and you'll just have to see it when you see it. But his character is interesting. I do like the so there's a scene, and you've probably seen this. They're doing the interviews, and then one of the characters wants to stop, and they cut away to like the production crew. Did you see that?
No, they
haven't done that yet.
I think it's three or four.
Oh,
anyway,
it must be three or four.
So that is a moment that I think narratively might come back, and what it says to me is if the show wanted to explore more of like that crew doing something, that could be a possibility.
Actually, I think that's tonight's episode.
Well, it's not five. We just watched it.
Okay.
I'll tell you that much. All I'm saying is they wanted
I saw a promo for tonight's episode, and it looked like it was Wednesday.
They played on Wednesday, BJ.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. But you mean this coming one?
This coming one.
So there is they've opened a narrative door that doesn't mean that they'll focus on these specific characters for the whole show, which is interesting because the whole thing is Roanoke or my Roanoke nightmare, but it could expand the world beyond that.
Mm.
Not beyond Roanoke, but those characters. And also, there is a callback to season, Carnival or Freak Show?
Freak Show. Or,
there is a callback to that season coming if you have not seen that
yet. They, yes, they tie into the lineage of one of the characters, one of the main characters from Freak Show.
Which I think is cool because I'm a big continuity nerd, and anytime you knit one story to another, even if it's a very throwaway connection, I get excited. I like it.
And he caught it from the minute they mentioned the character's name. But if you miss that, they spell it out for you about 5 minutes later when they basically give you the guy's lineage and end it with that one character.
Why leave it to a YouTube video to show it when you can just say it yourself?
They are putting these people out of work. And by work, I mean they need to do something.
So YouTube's already taking money out of their hands anyway.
So anyway, we've hijacked your contribution, but is there anything else?
No, you're good. That is.
And I'm glad they started calling it American Horror Story Roanoke because I refuse to call it my Roanoke.
No,
it sounds like a band name.
So when the first episode
that does sound good,
like, when the first episode came out, like everyone's like, "What the hell do we call this?"
Seriously,
American Horror Story Blair murder Witch house, Murder Blair House
six, Murder Farmhouse
Murder Redneck.
Did we just call it Six Question Mark? Is it Six Question Mark?
Yes. Although I did, the only time I actually kind of liked it was when they said, when they call it My Roanoke Nightmare, an American Horror Story. That's really fucking wordy, but that makes it sound cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it fits it.
It does.
The whole
it fits
idea
it
of the show name.
Yes. Yeah. But now you start seeing the actual, like, official American Horror Story, Roanoke. Like, so it's, they're now just using that as the shorthand for it, which is good.
All right, BJ, what you got?
All right, since Jared technically snaked one of the shows I wanted to talk about,
right.
I'm going to snake one of Jeff's.
God damn it.
Ash versus the Evil Dead Season 2. It's
so good.
Is everything.
I need to watch. I don't have Cinemax.
It is.
Stars.
I actually broke down, and I got the free trial of Stars on Amazon Instant Video.
That's how we got it.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's an extra, like, $9, and you just add it on to your Amazon Prime membership,
really?
And you can get all the Stars. TV shows and movies, it's kind of like old HBO Go
for
where you
a
don't
year?
Wow. And you get it the day after they air.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So I gotta do that now.
It's absolutely amazing. But I watched the first season and I loved the first season.
Yes.
I didn't think they could go any gorier.
Mmm. Foreplay.
But
foreplay.
That was
season,
foreplay.
Season one was foreplay.
I love how they set up the shots because I'm just sitting there and Ash is standing in a room full of dead bodies and I'm like, he's going inside one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And
not
sure
in the way you'd want him to.
And not in the way you would want him to. It's funny. It's horrifically gory. We get more Lucy Lawless.
She's a main character now.
Character.
She's a main character now.
I won't say redeemed, but
yeah,
they've given us more of her and I wanted more of her last season.
I love her. She was one of the best things about this new incarnation.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we're getting more story on the Necronomicon.
We get Lee Majors as Bruce Campbell's dad.
That
yes,
inspired casting.
And
oh
he
my
is
God.
Just as chauvinistic and like overly cheesy womanizer as Bruce Campbell. We can give Bruce Campbell a run for his money.
It proves.
To watch this.
It runs in the family. But I mean, the narrative's great. All the characters that are there,
and it's the best part that I think because I binge watched season one. It's a half hour long episode. You can pop through these real fast and just slam, get the gore, get the jokes, get out. On to the next episode.
Yeah, it's really if you're a horror fan of any kind of horror, if you like camp, you gotta watch the show.
Have you watched
absurd.
It, Oral? Deadites or zombies, I ain't doing that shit.
And I love the Deadites.
Wait, I thought you had
that's
a whole
true.
Thing about what's eating Oral.
Yeah, and the second episode just dropped, and it's awful because that means we have nothing in the buffer, uh-huh. and I have to record a new one.
You should watch Evil Dead, the
I
first one.
I don't want to, and we probably will.
I was going
to
say, that's the whole point of the show.
Does the show take comments or suggestions of stuff?
Sure. Well,
I know the person who makes it all.
Pass it along. Yeah, right? Pass it along. You probably will get heard. But yeah, no, that I think that's definitely my top pick for this fall TV season.
I'm very jealous. Jeff?
Okay, so now if we're doing just favorite show, there's a show I'm actually catching up on. I don't know if they've premiered the third season yet, but You're the Worst.
Yeah, they've premiered that.
I think that if a show was a spirit animal, You're the Worst would be my spirit animal.
Really?
This show is so fucking funny, and I had no idea it existed for 2 years, and it makes me sad. But I'm catching up on Hulu. New shows that I like, I actually like Lethal Weapon a lot. It's very, very by the numbers, very cheesy, but it's like an 80s action movie every week, so I kind of like that. And they're kind of dwelling on the first movie setup where Mel Gibson was not only crazy, but he was also suicidal because, you know, his wife had died. So they're sticking with that motif of the guy who plays him on the show being just off the rails and potentially dangerous because he wants to kill himself. But yeah, so between those two, I mean, I was going to talk about The Flash, but Pat kind of talked about the first episode. It's okay. I am kind of,
referring to the first episode of the series, but yeah, I was not impressed with Flashpoint.
Two tornadoes.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, if one wasn't cheesy enough, let's go do it again.
Two tornadoes.
Yeah.
Run, Barry. Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's
there was so much buildup for Flashpoint, and
even the buildup was cheesy though.
Yeah, but I think it there was so much like when they did the tweeted out the picture of like the script and it was like Flashpoint. It's like all this stuff like okay we're gonna do this and yes I understand that the timeline has changed and they're doing these little things but.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You make such a point of this, and you wrap it up in a 40-minute episode.
Well, but that's the thing. Now it's spilling over into the season.
No, I get that. But I would have liked to have seen maybe a two-part to explore this new world.
Yeah. Age of Apocalypse still did that whole going back in time, alternate timeline, let's go back. That you can't do way better than that.
Yeah, for sure. True.
So this
Age
version
of Apocalypse, come on.
That's amazing. The fact that they had the balls back then to, we're going to stop all of the X-books for the whole summer while we put out these alternate books and just let you just ruminate on it.
So good.
But this one, I mean, Flashpoint,
I miss the 90s.
Yeah.
There's a whole industry based on that sentiment right now, right? Seriously.
But I do enjoy, because I can imagine on the actor's side that it gives them more to do now. Like, the guy who played Cisco actually has something to be besides just the usual cheesy Cisco.
It's a way to shake the ant farm and do something different without having something
The only thing that actually, like, and you knew it was going to happen, but made me kind of a little giddy was at the end of episode two? Are we two episodes in?
Yeah, we're only two episodes in.
At the end of episode two, when Barry walks out and Caitlin's just like, she has that look, and she puts her hand out, and it starts to crackle and look like dry ice, and I was like, ooh.
And I love how Barry just can't not. He just can't not be like, everything's fine. And I'm like, you should know by now, Barry, when you say those words.
That was why I liked that they threw back in Jay Garrick again to be like, Barry, stop fucking up. You fucking up. I need you good at this speed thing.
Speaking of, I miss the 90s. When Jay Garrick pulls him into the diner and what was it, Runaway Train?
Yeah, Runaway Train. Dawson's Creek was on the TV.
Yep.
He's like, and Barry actually goes, "What year is this? Really? You are so young.
It was so
you were probably a little sperm cell when these things were happening."
See, and I had hopes that Barry was at least within my generation, but no, he
was
back.
The cusp at best.
He's probably like 26.
Yeah.
He's young.
But yeah, so I mean, The Flash, Arrow, I actually really like DC's Legends of Tomorrow, but Arrow and The Flash have become the obligatory, I'm going to continue watching because I've watched it this long, and until they really piss me off, I'm not going to stop, I guess. So that's what The Flash has become. But yeah, favorite show is still You're the Worst.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic, fantastic show.
So I want to talk about Luke Cage, but oh my god, I feel like there's going to be a lot to unpack there. So I think
that needs its own micro.
I think we need a microsode for that.
But I want to at least mention, and I feel very happy, and it's all because we were in New York.
I haven't started episode 4.
Oh.
Well, you got a long way to
4
go.
4 is great.
Yeah, I know. So don't say anything.
No.
Besides that, it's great, and we're doing a microsode.
We will.
Literally, I have dodged.
I won't spoil anything.
They all
you don't already know.
It just everybody.
But I am proud that Pat and I finished the whole show in like record time because we had nothing better to do at his parents' place.
They do a strange pivot with Marvel Zombies at episode 4, and then the rest of the season is Marvel Zombies. I don't know why they did that.
And then Jean Grey showed up.
Well, Captain America brought them all back.
They had an uncensored episode where you get to see his junk, and it's gone now.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
As a straight man, I was impressed.
But no, we will talk about Luke Cage in more detail. Suffice to say, it was great.
And then episode 6, it just turned into Jessica Jones season 2. I don't know what happened. It was great.
So now what I will talk about then, because I haven't finished Mr. Robot season 2, and that's what I wanted to talk about. But anyway, long story short, didn't get to finish it. Legends of Tomorrow is back. And as much as the first season was kind of cheesy fun.
Also playing it safe.
Yeah.
Second season.
No.
Oh, no.
They're writing shit off. They're bringing in the Justice Society of America, which is very near and dear to my heart.
Legion of Doom seems to be getting
definitely coming into play.
They're like, nuking New York City.
They're doing some crazy shit.
Oh, no.
And I really thought the first episode was a lot of fun. Although when they scattered, some of us have seen it.
No.
They scattered them all across time as this way to save them.
It was called Time Scatter.
Time Scatter. Yeah, really. Right on the nose. I kind of thought that would be more of a, let's go build the team back up over the course of a few episodes.
Oh, yeah, no. They were like,
kind of like, oh, no, we're doing it now. Okay, great.
We're going to do a montage.
Yes. But I am still enjoying it.
Except for Rory.
Well,
Rory, they're going to need some time to find him.
And this is the only thing I will say. In fact, someone who reviewed this, I forgot who it was, they said that like they're just making an American Doctor Who. And that's fine because Doctor Who, even though it's perfectly great, good show for America, like, you don't need to be like an Anglophile to like Doctor Who. This is just another incarnation of it with different characters, and it's fine. It's an anthology show. You can tell a Western because they're going to do a Jonah Hex story again.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have a, you know, a period piece back in like the 1700s and Queen Elizabeth. Who knows? Like, that's what they're doing, and it's cool. I'm fine with that. I'm a Doctor Who fan. Of course I'm fine with that. But the character, the actors themselves are having so much fun. Rory,
Rip Hunter
is going to be a part of the show even if he's not in every episode, which is still cool.
Dominic Purcell, I liked him on Prison Break, but I only liked the first season.
Yes,
I really like him as what, Firefly? Is that who he's playing?
No,
or?
He's not Captain Cold. He's
Heat Miser.
Heat Miser.
He's Heat Wave. I love Brandon Routh, because I think they even make like a Superman joke in this, like,
yep,
I'm a Boy Scout or something. Like, he is Iron Man as the Atom, and that's fine. And the Time Scatter joke, which I don't know if you guys have read the Atom series where he's in like the jungle running around.
Oh,
with, like,
yeah,
the ants and doing all this crazy. Like, that was sort of like a nice little reference to that.
They did some really good references in that.
I love the unabashed lesbian content with
Sarah Lance.
Sarah Lance.
I love her.
Fucking awesome.
Lock up your daughters. Sarah Lance will get them.
Lock up your village.
God bless her. I love, and I don't even, that character's fairly, like, that's like an Arrow invention, right? Like, there was no
white canary.
Canary.
Yeah, no, there was Hawk. The closest I could draw is to Hawk and Dove.
Yeah.
And that's
it.
But no, she's something else, and it's really good. And, and of course, Firestorm. Dr. What's Dr. Stein?
Dr. Stein.
Played by the amazing Victor Garber, Silver Fox that he is.
Sinfully delicious.
Yes.
he's happily married. Is he married
to a man?
Yeah, no. Yep. Is he?
He is.
He is.
He is.
That ship has sailed, Brian. I'm sorry.
They live in New York.
He's on the list. He's on your list of five.
Y'all swingers?
Apparently, at BJ's birthday brunch, this one over here is talking about, oh, once you get a couple of breakups under your belt, now he's trying to get him hooked up with Victor Garber.
What?
I'm sitting right here.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, man,
I
was probably on, like, my third champagne bottle by then.
Wait, we were talking about relationships. Wait,
did I make that comment?
Yes.
How did I miss this?
Yes. Comment.
Damn it.
That's not me.
No, I'm saying he's, at first, he's...
Oh. If I slept with Victor Garber, would you have a problem?
They swing. Fine.
Exactly.
that picture would go up on the wall with
Victor
the rest of the
stuff. Garber is an American treasure, just like Anderson Cooper.
Oh,
in fact, can I get a video of the two of them? Because that'd be amazing.
I will say this.
So much solar.
If you do sleep with Victor Garber, at some point he just has to do these.
Sinfully
delicious Cocoa Devil. And then I'll be fine with it. I'm A-okay with
it. I want him to sing something from Joseph and the Multicolored Dream.
Oh, God.
No. Godspell. Sorry.
Your fantasies are so weird.
I'm a bad Broadway queen. Godspell.
Coming from me.
Coming from me.
I mean, it's not like he's a PE teacher in your fantasies, but you know.
Technicolor Dream.
Wait,
to be fair.
Mike is the PE teacher in your fantasy?
You're the PE teacher, and Mike is
the
science teacher. Science teacher.
Hold the fucking door.
Wait, does he have a? Does he have
how
tiny
am I
on?
Oh yeah,
with the whistle.
Oh yeah,
and the clipboard.
Oh yeah,
ew.
All of it.
His balls are hanging.
Nobody
out,
knows
so.
This, Mike, but if he ever listens to the show,
yes,
which
Jared?
You should. I know we're totally off on a tangent. I know.
What the fuck are you guys talking about?
I have no goddamn clue.
So
there is a friend of ours that
jump in the crazy pool.
We say, and a lot of times has a striking resemblance to Brian.
Okay.
BJ has like fantasized about the two of them in one of his sexual fantasies,
okay.
In which Mike is a science teacher and Brian
so
is a PE teacher.
I
this fantasy.
A math teacher.
I remember BJ saying this like 2 years ago. It's not a waste to me. And I don't know how this hasn't come up before now.
I don't get
it. No, you actually mixed the two of them up. You were like, is that Brian? And it was Mike walking across the parking lot, me and Pat.
Oh, yes, that guy.
We about lost our minds.
Are you serious? For real?
Yeah.
I didn't have my glasses on. I'm like, it looks like Brian. It's got the same silhouette.
My God.
Died right there.
You really got to find a new look.
Yeah, I do. All right. So all of this is prelude, of course, to the show that we need to give homage to, the show that has dominated our lives
in some way.
But before we get into that one, can I do one honorable mention that
sure.
I didn't? It's coming up soon on HBO. It's called Insecure.
No, it's already out.
Did they do the first episode?
Oh,
I know they did the preview episode.
Yeah, no.
Did it come out already? Mm-hmm. All right. So HBO, it's a half-hour comedy show, and it is based off of the web series Awkward Black Girl, where Issa Rae is a substitute teacher. She's a teacher. And the previews, I don't know like all the details. Obviously, it's a woman like getting ready to hit her 30s, a black woman in America about to hit her 30s, and just kind of dealing with life and kids. And like, and when I say kids, I mean her students being her students. And all of it, just the previews have looked amazing. Absolutely amazing. That's Insecure on HBO. So I at least wanted to put a new show out there for my TV roundup.
Coincidentally, we probably saw that preview on a Westworld watching.
The show of Broken Dreams.
It was during my binge of Game of Thrones where they were showing it heavily a couple of months ago.
I think the first time I saw it was when I watched
But yes, when we watched Westworld the other day, it is one of the
so,
trailers.
God damn it, Hurricane Matthew.
Funny story, I think we've alluded to this, if not outright said it. We were actually reached out to by the producers of Westworld or a creative agency like promoting the show.
Back up. HBO asked us.
Yeah.
You don't have to give them
right?
the nuts and bolts.
I.
You are the worst publicist
I'm
ever.
I'm a PE teacher, goddammit.
This is why you're the PE teacher.
Shut up. I teach maths.
All right, everybody. No. Let's do some. What was it?
Curling?
No.
suicide drills?
Pick up sticks? What was the one you do? Like the
Pilates?
Spur pickers where you have to go through your legs three times?
You think I ever did these growing up?
That's true.
I got out of pee because I was in marching band.
You fat bastard.
All right, so let's just be honest. Like we were going to be involved in helping promote the show. We were going to be going to a panel discussion about LGBT and other issues, gender. I don't even know what the panel discussion was. Oral was going to be a part of that panel.
It was going to be a hot panel. And they asked for him.
They asked by name for Oral, as do we all.
I think they were just, they got the wrong email, and they were just trying to get them sexy time.
Well, they were too late.
Just kidding.
But,
I mean, to be fair, they were like, well, can you come up? No? Can we get Oral?
Long story short, a little thing called a hurricane came in the way, and there was a curfew,
and a run on the banks and gas stations.
Oh, there's a run on the banks down here? Too?
Oh, and grocery stores.
Yes.
Out of canned goods, water,
batteries.
Batteries.
Bread.
It looked like Omega Man.
Oh, Jesus.
It was like Black Friday. I visited 4 different stores, not because I needed anything, just because I wanted to see how bad it got.
No food. No money, no gas.
You
anywhere.
Better lock your ass indoors because nobody left their houses pretty much from Thursday night through Saturday if you weren't paying attention.
Saturday. I was lucky to find gas up until Saturday at a Wawa.
Friday afternoon was orange when they lifted the
yeah.
It's like Wawas were open and I think 7-Elevens were open.
Yeah.
And they were slammed.
You drove through town and saw a lot of boarded up windows, down trees.
Wild dogs running across the streets.
were you boarding up the shop?
I didn't do it.
Oh, okay. I was sitting in Taco Bell parking lot eating Taco Bell, watching the shop, and I was like, I'm going to board up the shop.
Like
you do. Like seeing nature.
So,
So not unlike a virtual reality experience of a hurricane preparation, that we were in New York. We didn't get to witness this, but y'all got to witness this back here in Florida. And it prevented you from going up there.
And we had a game plan.
You had a plan.
Oral.
You say, oh, yeah. What? Put you back out.
We did.
Jeff and I literally were in it to win it.
We were discussing, okay, Friday morning. We are going to keep it open until Friday morning. Then we'll make our final decision.
Yeah.
And then Thursday night was like, well, fuck, that curfew.
Yeah. And so
it didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
But we watched the show.
Yes, we did.
The first and second episode.
Uh-huh.
At least most of us.
They sneak peeked the second episode. So we all got to see that a week early if we just got the regular HBO access.
Let me just say, from a totally unbiased, like, this is... pretend they never reached out to us. I would love this show no matter what.
Absolutely.
This show scratches itches that I have had...
Since Lost?
Before Lost.
Girl, is that your sciatica?
Actually, yeah.
This is hemorrhoids flaring up.
Battlestar Galactica, probably a little bit of Lost, but we're talking way back. Like anything Blade Runner that explores the idea of artificial intelligence as expressed in the form of a robot or
humanoid
or whatever.
Even back when you were reading Isaac Asimov.
Yes. And in fact, they reference that the robots have this, you know, programming that prevents them from killing
the
or
three
hurting
rules.
People. Right, which is based on the three laws of robotics.
Yeah.
So, like, this show is meant for not just me, but certainly got a part of it right aimed at my heart. And it's executed really well and I've seen Westworld the movie, but it was years ago, and I need to go back and watch it again. So it was a Michael Crichton novel.
It wasn't a novel.
It was a movie.
It was a movie.
He
wrote and directed.
Right. He directed?
He did.
Holy shit. And they've adapted this into more of a long-form thing, which is great, because I think that story needed to be unpacked and explored. It's a world. It's a whole universe of science fiction where people can go into this space and interact with these...
Dinosaurs.
Nope.
It's different? It's different.
Yes, different.
Okay.
Nice.
Seems the same.
Listen, okay, Crichton does have these certain things that he brings up and uses. Anyway.
He got stuck on It's a Small World when he was a kid, and it traumatized him.
Actually. But no, you go in and you interact with this whole Western landscape, and you can, kind of like a modern MMO, you can use the storylines and like do the main story quests, or you can go off and do your own little side thing and either... kill engines or fuck hoes. I mean, basically,
hookers
that's
and blow.
Did you just say engines?
Yes.
He meant automobile engines.
No. This is a V6. World that demonizes the American Native Americans. It does. They showed that in the second episode.
It was more of the terminology.
I'm not. Obviously, I don't have a pejorative against American Native Americans. But that's what this world is built on. It's built on
that.
Throw
that shit in reverse, back that car up.
See, that is a quote. That is not a me being a racist. I'm just putting that out there. But no, that's the world they're playing off of.
This is real life Red Dead Redemption. It took me back. As I was seeing the giant desert landscape, I thought, fuck, that's a lot of green for a desert. Second thing I thought was, this is like real life Red Dead. Oh man, I need to go back and play Red Dead.
It's more like West, but like prairie.
Yeah.
Elements of prairie.
It's got that too.
But really what I find so fascinating about this series, and they tout it as like the origins of sin.
Yeah.
And not sin as this sort of like biblical thing, even though you're dealing with like the creation of life and death and what it means to be alive or human. It is this deep dive into what it is to have these
impulses.
It's like having the guise of civilization and stripping individuals away and seeing what they are at their core.
Right.
Yeah. And when you do that, and even people who seem benign don't seem to have any ulterior motives in the first and second episodes, you see this sort of perverse darkness, and they either like feed into that, or they're so oblivious to how they interact because, you know, these androids are intelligent, not necessarily sentient, all of them, but intelligent to a point where they can have they can simulate. And maybe it's more than a simulation, like feelings and emotions and these
and memory.
And memory.
Well, that's the key. When he unlocks that ability for them to remember their past lives, if you will, that seems to be the kickstart for their ascension.
But what's so horrific is that
goddamn Windows update.
These androids, you know, some of them are designed to be evil. Some of them are supposed to be that wholesome, you know, like swashbuckling hero or not necessarily damsel in distress. It's just like strong, independent woman who's a Pollyanna. But the way like the managers and the coders and the staff of Westworld treat these things, and they call them like livestock, and
they objectify, behind the scenes.
Oh, sure.
And it's these like really sterile, lifeless sort of scenes.
They're
horrific because they stand in stark contrast to these androids in their quote-unquote natural habitat.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're pleasant and they're kind, and yes, they have issues. But, like, I mean, humanity's just fucked. Like, that's what you get out of the first couple of episodes of Westworld. You might have some good people, but ultimately, we're fucked.
Well, Dr. Ford talks about that, how we have reached the apex of our abilities as humanity.
There's no more sickness. There's no more death. We've conquered all these things. It gives you those little hints about what humanity is like outside of this. And it's just like, fuck.
Man is the true monster.
It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. I mean, it's pretty depressing or dystopian. Mm-hmm. But what is cool to me is they're exploring these concepts of simulation and of like emergent intelligence, and that's what the main character I can't think of her name.
Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah, well, that's her actor. Yeah, but her character in the simulation, like her seemingly
the like, original, she's like one of the original hosts. She's like the longest running host, running android in Westworld.
They keep patching her and improving her and all this stuff. And to me, as a programmer, like, this is some, like, very, like, we don't model humans, but the fact that they're perfecting these simulations, the fact that they're, like, reusing these things, like, that all speaks to the thing I do day to day. And on top of that, the sci-fi element, the character that Ed Harris plays.
Oh, man. The Man in Black. That is, like, my favorite Ed Harris character.
Well, in the movie, that's a robot. And in this show...
Dolores,
thank you. Because you can hear Ed saying, come on, Dolores.
Names that rhymes with a woman's body part.
Dolores!
It's a Seinfeld joke.
But the twist on this, at least one of the twists, is that he is not a robot, evidently. He seems to be a player, part of the, you know, a human coming into the game.
Have you heard of the crazy fan theory about Ed Harris's character? Can I share it with you?
Sure. Go
ahead. The character they introduced in the second episode, Jimmy, mm-hmm. who they – or no, the actor's name is Jimmy. I forget what his real name is or his name is on the show.
He was an ex-machina, yes.
Yes. They're basically saying that that is the flashback version of the Man in Black. That the reason why, because they show him getting off a train, which if you compare to the season one episode where everybody is being kept, the hosts are being kept in cold storage, mm-hmm. it looks surprisingly similar to the train station that he yeah. walks out of. Yeah,
that is interesting.
The Westworld logo is different from what the current day Westworld logo
really?
Is, so it looks like the older version of it. And they're saying that basically he picks the white hat when he walks in, because originally he goes in intending to be a good person, right. and he's evolved. I mean, this is a theory. Based on two episodes, that he's going to evolve into what becomes the Man in Black. Because he says, I've been coming here for 30 years and you never remember me, you know, to Dolores at the end, or when he kills her the first time. And basically, he's been coming there so long that he's now gotten to this, I want to know what's beyond this. I want to know the metagame to Westworld, and he's doing all these things.
Which opens up a whole new depth of story that they could tell that they're alluding to very Lostianly, like, you know, oh, let's put some little breadcrumbs out there.
Yeah, but it's just...
It's and the music's by the same composer of Game of Thrones.
Oh,
and I like the way it incorporates
Rajwan something.
Dasani, yeah. It incorporates the player piano, which is a powerful metaphor for what Westworld is as this
and
artistic instrument
and
that plays itself.
It's like BioShock Infinite, where they'll throw in current day songs or a little older songs into the player piano.
And you know, like seeing all of these different characters interact, seeing that you know these hosts are doomed to repeat these cyclical like storylines in
like
a world
MMO.
That completely resets itself because it has no history.
Right.
It's just, it is one of those really smart, grandiose meditations on indulgence and the psyche and the sense of self.
Mm.
And when you're liberated from these like social constructs and norms, like are you still human?
Yep.
Are you still intrinsically, like you said, Jeff, like are you you? Like are you a good and moral person? And in a world with no morals, is having morals still relevant?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it's exploring what people playing online gaming on MMOs they're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep seeing that metaphor played out when they're unveiling the new storyline and talking about how, it's going to be great, all this bloodshed and gore and all this stuff, and Ford comes up, and it's like, why? What's the point? You're just revealing who you are as a creator, not who the character is.
But the fucked up part about that is Anthony Hopkins, as the Walt Disney of all this, kind of shows that his version, the one he built, is the version that allows for people to kind of come in and rape and pillage and mm-hmm. kill and do whatever they want. And that was the one he basically set out to make.
Yeah.
Like, that's his version of this whole experience.
Because it lets them show who they are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And while all of that, to me, is very interesting, I'm excited to see that watershed moment when they realize that, you know, these androids are now, like, individual selves, an amalgam of their past lives and their current story arc.
Yes.
And what... like, and how you're going to treat them.
And when they have choice.
And because, you know, like, as of right now, even though, like, the guests, the humans in this world are despicable, these are things to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to see what happens when they stop being things.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for us, we know that, you know, there's more to them that you know, these characters
know.
But the
players don't know.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
But what happens when, like, you have that moment where do I value you because you can think for yourself? You now have these, like, desires that aren't pre-programmed to you? Or do I think this is just, you know, yeah, that might be all well and good, but you're not flesh and blood.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
the show is getting some negative press. I'll just put this out there. We were listening to a... that was like some Canadian pop culture show on WMYC when we were up in New York. And they were complaining about how the rape is depicted and how – and some people were saying that it's getting criticism because of that, like Game of Thrones, like other HBO shows that kind of feature that, you know, as a storytelling thing.
Sexploitation?
Yeah. And the only thing that was said is stay tuned because this is – the prologue to setting up these androids' ownership of their own society and what they're doing. And so you have to have this to show what they do then in response.
It's like you have you see Joffrey or Ramsay Bolton, basically you punish them for being the bad guy, and it's like, well, wait, if once they get their comeuppance, you're going to feel better about it because they did these horrible things. It's justification for... Well, it's storytelling. It's a storytelling trope.
It's storytelling. So, yeah, I mean, but that was something interesting that had been brought up in kind of a critical moment for the show. But overall, I think we all who've seen it really agree. It's probably one of the most exciting shows that's come out in a while.
Episode 3 is on tonight.
And episode 3 is on tonight, and I'm very excited about watching it. So if you haven't had a chance, go check out Westworld. Pat and I are really sad. We missed an opportunity to go see the VR. They actually had a HTC Vive, like, sort of...
The Vive is amazing.
The Vibe is really amazing. If you haven't had a chance to check it out.
It's worth the extra $200 over the Oculus.
Well, yeah.
Is it $200 or $400?
$200.
It's a lot.
$400 over the PSVR.
Yeah, $400 over the PSVR.
But let me tell you, it's worth checking out. Now, we got to move on. We don't have a whole lot of time left. We'll probably have to save our comic book discussion for another time. But I do want to put out there one of our former straight boys on the floor. I think you were a straight boy on the floor at one point, Jeff.
Yeah, now I have a chair.
You have a chair. Mm-hmm. Jacob just attended Final Fantasy XIV's Fan Fest out in Los Angeles. Las Vegas.
Are we two Final Fantasies beyond that?
No, 15's about to come out.
Okay.
But 14 is the MMO world that they're still building on.
That's when they relaunched and did all that stuff.
We're sorry. Here it is.
Realm Reborn.
Here it is all over again. But let me tell you,
it's a great game that he got me into, and they just announced a new expansion coming out next year called Stormblood, I believe, and it's an expansion of the world. It's all this cool stuff that, you know, MMOs do.
Stormblood.
But one of the things that's really cool is Jacob went out there as one of the in-game characters with his father.
That costume they made.
They did such a good job, and it's a character set of a father-son. Mm-hmm. It's a dance that they have to do, and mm-hmm. this is an in-game dance you do. And they got a huge fan reaction. We'll put the video up on Facebook, so if you want to check them out, the characters Hildebrandt and Godbert. If you played Final Fantasy XIV, or if you're curious about LGBT representation in Final Fantasy XIV, we did a podcast interview with some of the people in the guild that I'm a part of called Taint, or the Rough Trade Game Guild, game community, and that is up in the feed if you go back and you look for it. But it is a great game, and that just happened this weekend, and Jacob, we're really proud of him for getting out there. And I mean, you know, he's an introvert like the rest of us, somewhat. He got out somewhat. Not okay.
He's
not
in the Brian mold of introverts.
Okay, he's like me. But he he got out there, put himself out there, and he had a great reaction. So we're really proud of him. So comic books we'll skip. Let's do the things that are giving us life, and if those are to extra television shows or something else, quick. You want to give a mention? We'll go around the horn. We'll go reverse direction.
Shit.
I'll start.
Thank God.
I just had a chance to finally see the musical or operetta Candide from Leonard Bernstein.
Oh, today. Really?
Yeah, the Atlanta Philharmonic did a production of it. And some friends of mine, Samantha Barnes was in it, Joey Vasek.
You totally are.
Jeff
Voltaire
Moore. Oh, I love Voltaire. But the thing about Candide that I really love is the music. And to me, it's Bernstein's best musical. I love West Side Story. I love all of his other pieces. But the Glitter and Be Gay, made famous, well, you know, by Kristen Chenoweth, of course, recently, or like 10, 8 years ago. But also Make Our Garden Grow are two of my favorite songs in all, like, American, like, orchestral choral music. So
that would be considered modern.
Yeah, it's just, you know, contemporary. But anyway, it was a great performance. They did it as a clown motif, which is kind of weird. Everybody was like clown characters. It was kind of cool, but I dragged Pat along, and you liked it. You said it was cute.
Yes.
It's a batshit crazy story, so like if you've never read Candide or seen the musical or operetta or whatever, you should be aware it's
Tanger
weird.
Garden. What the fuck?
Anyway, so it was great. I'm really happy. I'm glad OPO did it. They did a great job, and yeah, great.
Let's see. It'll be you're the worst. I'm gonna say it again. Great show. Fantastic show. Yeah. And also Kid Cudi. He put an album a few years ago called Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
And he's been relevant in the news recently because he actually entered into rehab for clinical depression.
Okay.
And he kind of brought the national conversation to African-American men and in general just being very much against coming forward with any kind of you know, depression, bipolar disorder. They just don't normally talk about certain things. And he put out this long Twitter post before he went in, and it was really touching, and it kind of it brought to light just a lot of things that people, especially in the entertainment industry, think that they go through that you might not think that would be an issue. And along with that, just the fact that I have a lot of his albums, and I've gone back and actually been really getting into Space Odyssey. So that's been a really unrepeat on my playlist.
Depression is a white people's problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's not.
I think my grandfather actually said that to me once.
Well, really? It's
like legit.
It's like this internalized, like, you know who are depressed? Yeah, people who have the luxury to be depressed.
I got you. Right. Yep. I've heard that argument.
Yeah. Everybody else just kind of gets over and gets on with things.
Yeah, but no, that's it. You know, depression and mental illness is a serious issue in minority cultures.
Sure.
Especially
a list of reasons.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of them are throwbacks of a bygone era where you never trusted the medical professionals because they would experiment on you and say that you were okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you, America.
All right, BJ. Giving you life.
I gotta say, it's Supergirl.
Did we see Superman's ass yet?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes.
Specifically,
seriously.
Tyler Hoechlin. Hoechlin. Hoechlin.
Hoechlin.
Hoechlin. His Superman was
a breath of fresh air.
Everything you want it to be.
Better than Man of Steel?
Definitely better than Man
More
of Steel.
More personality than Man of
More
Steel.
More personality. The whole show
Not
overall.
Not as hot as Man of Steel.
Oh, I don't know. That ass.
No.
Sure. In
Listen,
stills,
you couple
he's
ass
fine.
Implants in a costume.
That's true.
You show me that naked ass looking like that.
I mean,
I will talk.
We'll put that out into the universe, please.
Great for pictures, bad for a TV show and or movie.
Tyler's True Ass, The Quest.
But it was a good show. Good season premiere.
The thing that I like most is when a show does move to a different network and gets a couple different writers and I think they get a different producer this time around.
Same producer.
Berlanti's been the same.
Okay. Everybody has a bit more bite, and the hard cuts they did to a lot of the characterizations in the story were pretty hilarious to watch. Like, romance, fuck that. You know, subterranean base, nah, been done, fuck that. We're going to move them to a high rise. It's just, it was, they legit went through it with a fine surgical tool.
Berlanti even said for season two with the whole romance angle with Jimmy or James Olsen and Kara, that basically, like, they did it in season one because they felt they had to. But then when they got the second life on CW, they're like, no, let's kill that. We want to let them see where those characters actually will go on their own. Which was kind of nice. It's like, yeah, you do seem to be forced into a romantic pairing in every show. You got to have this will-they-won't-they thing. And, you know, you don't really have to.
And it wasn't something that I gave a shit about when I watched the first season. I was like, who's going to cry this time?
I mean, I know we're all up on Superman, but I still find it funny that James is more buff than Superman.
Yes. Yes, that is also amusing, but that's pretty much what I got.
Jared,
I'm always a fan of video game movie adaptations of video games. So the Assassin's Creed movie is coming up pretty soon.
Well, I thought that was already out. That's not come out yet.
It's not out yet.
Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, so it'll be coming up pretty soon. I'll be interested to see how it goes.
Is that a Christmas release?
Think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Fassbender, so I like the game. The game's really cool, mm-hmm. and that they kept this futuristic element.
Yeah.
That I'm glad. I was like, they could have just made a period piece. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'd like to start off with a quick honorable mention. How to Get Away with Murder Season 3 is out, and it's great.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun.
Still pretty gay.
Huh?
Lots of gay.
Yeah, still pretty gay. Lots of gay. Good, bouncing dude. Back and forth. In time, by a couple of months, major things are happening. Someone is dead. Uh-oh. We don't know who is dead.
Do we know how they got away with it?
Right? Yeah. He just can't help himself. Yeah. He just cannot help himself.
I'm so sorry.
But I'm sorry. Where's my drum kit?
Every episode, we find out who's not dead. Okay. So it's going to get to that point where we're just like, who is it? But really, my thing is November is the magical month. where literally Doctor Strange and Fantastic Beast are coming out within like 2 weeks of each
other. Movie series.
And yes, it's going to be a 5-movie series because what this is, it's Harry Potter meets Downton Abbey, and it's literally...
In America.
Yes. Fashion for me during the Prohibition era, like the final trailers have come out for both of them. It just looks... slick and pretty on both ends.
They said like what Colin Farrell has like a Deathly Hallows necklace, so there's some kind of connective tissue. Maybe it's a Dumbledore showing up in this shit.
Flat out shows up.
Okay, there you go.
Not Gambon necessarily, but yeah.
So I'm totally down. I'm going to have to see both of them in IMAX. I haven't bought my tickets yet because I'm an idiot. So I need to get
when
on
they come
that.
Out? When did they come out, Chris? Oh, November.
November. Said. So yes, for
so many
sure.
movies.
Yep.
Two awesome movies, back to back, buying all the shit.
Pat?
So I will give an honorable mention. New Year's Eve, Parliament House has finally released their lineup for the New Year's Eve show. Bob the Drag Queen.
Can she turn it?
And Bianca Del Rio. When I first heard about that, I squeed a little in the office, and I'm so excited that it's out there in the world now. Tickets go on sale, or will have probably gone on sale by the time you hear this, and they will have, because they go on sale Monday, the day after we record this. So that's going to be fantastic. I'm actually looking forward to this. The last couple of years with the Winner's Circle has been hit or miss with some of the queens. And to have Bob and Bianca is going to be amazing.
So if you want to come down to Orlando for your New Year's experience,
at your tickets Parliament, out. Which, you know what? I've been to Parliament for their Halloween parties, which are always a trip.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So to imagine, they're literally going to roll out the red carpet and that step and repeat.
It's going to be insane. Mm-hmm. And that's coming. I'm so amazed. So amazed. But the big thing, and this will come out when we are in the midst of it, giving me life and gray hairs, is Bear Bust. Yes. 26th annual Bear Bust.
And this episode is coming out right during Bear Bust.
Yes.
So if you are, I will try to live stream video from Bear Bust just so you can see the spectacle.
Yeah,
it's gonna be crazy.
It's crazy. Is the last 2 years, I think, pretty much since you started really taking it over, have been transformative for the event. It is definitely living up to what it was, you know, a decade ago, whenever I first became aware of it. Parliament House is packed.
Yeah,
and this year, Lady Bunny. Is an amazing drag queen, legendary, and she's gonna be hosting Mr. Bear Bust. Oh my god,
and it's. Otters and
pandas,
bears,
cubs,
and
everybody.
Wolf cubs. Oh my!
Oh my god!
I personally won't go. Look, there are some times where, and I've grown up here, and you know, I mean, it's different when you work there. I can't be found at Parliament House at the crack of dawn, walking out of a room. I'll be ruined.
Your reputation will be dragged to the mud.
Exactly.
That'll be the live event we post on the site.
That'll be the next episode of What's Eating World.
Can I stage a video of you doing that?
No.
That'd be great.
We should do it.
I think we can make this happen.
I agree.
I think we should do this.
That'll be great.
I gotta stay clear.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. It's always, because I don't know if you know this, the musical guests at these events have grown, like they didn't used to focus on artistry and musicianship. There are some amazing, like, music, bear community-oriented musicians.
Yeah, for the most part, they're all out of the bear community.
Jay Arsenault.
Glenn Stewart. Paul Middleton from London is coming over, making his U.S. debut this year. Those are our big three concerts for the weekend. We have Lady Bunny, like you said. She'll be performing at 10 and 12 with the Footlight Players.
The bears are?
Can I finish?
Sorry.
And she'll be hosting at 11 o'clock on the pool stage. The cast of Where the Bears Are, Joe, Rick, and Ben, who were here last year, are coming back. This time they're bringing Chad Sanders, who plays Detective Winters on the series. The four of them will be there. They'll be doing a screening of the series in either a full movie version, or they'll go through and highlight a lot of their favorite episodes. And it's the debut of the Mother's Day episode, which is only available on the DVD, which is up for pre-order at wherethebearsare.tv. And my personal favorite for Flesh Friday, on Friday, because we always have a porn star, an adult film entertainer, Colby Jansen is going to be our guest for Flesh Friday.
You know who he is?
Yeah.
Oh.
I planted that seed a little while ago.
What? And Tish.
And it blossomed into a lovely booking. So
who was that one who was just tall enough not to be considered
a midget?
Yeah.
So well, he's not a bear, though.
Well, so, no.
So
what's
many.
His name again?
Armand Rizzo.
Armand Rizzo. Yeah.
I was thinking about that. The world's biggest cum dumpster at the world's biggest cum dumpster. Thank you, Bobby DeSermon.
So, yeah. So, Bear Bus is going to be fantastic. If you are hearing this and you're in the area, or you can make a quick jaunt down, come on down, hang out with us. And, yeah, it'll be fun.
I also want to give a quick personal thing. DJ Justice, who has been on this show once and is a friend of several of us, passed away suddenly during the hurricane or right before.
That was so abrupt and sudden.
I got a call at the Comic-Con we were at from a friend of mine, Brant, who listens to the show and wanted to tell me in person because he knew we knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so sudden and shocking. And I'm probably still in shock because he was such a vibrant force in Orlando. His show Out Loud Orlando on 91.5 here in Orlando is a weekly fixture that I know Oral and Pat have both been on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on our show. He's a big geek, longtime customer of A Comic Shop.
Yeah, I literally saw him the week before. Like, I would see him weekly and we would laugh and joke. And
yeah.
Like,
he was a force of nature.
He was. And like, he, even though I never told him, and it's one of those things where, like, now that you think about it, you wish you could say, but, like, there are a lot of things about myself that I really take from him.
Yes.
Because, you know, once you met him, you knew that you should never be ashamed of who you are. You should hit on anyone that you find attractive.
Yep.
And you should totally start prep because I want to be one less. And so, when I think about David Jeremiah Zadonik, like, it's just, he was a positive influence.
Yeah.
He didn't style himself as such.
No.
But
he was a cancer survivor and uncle to his lovely nephews, like a great son of his father and mother, who he's very public about their relationship and certain things they went through. And like, he was just a very like public person about his life and his story. And I mean, it was shocking that he passed so suddenly, and just it's so messed up.
It is, but I will say this, in the conversations leading up to his sudden death, like,
he was happy.
He was super happy.
Yeah, he was.
Like, the man beat fucking cancer.
Yeah, he did.
And would tell you at the drop of a hat, he was working. He was traveling.
Yep.
You cannot say that man didn't live.
No, he lived two lives at least. And we at Flame On just definitely want to pay tribute to him. And not only part of the Orlando gay community, but as a gay geek, as a huge gay geek who made our friend Joshua very uncomfortable back in that episode.
And it made me so happy.
I know it did.
I'll miss you so much.
So we'll probably at some point very soon reshare that episode in the feed just so you guys can easily access it. It was a great episode. He really was a phenomenal person. And we hope Out Loud Orlando has a future in Orlando. I know Bobby from Parliament House and some other people got there this past week and did an episode as like a wake. And I'm hoping that that lives on because it's a great show and we want to keep it part of this community. So totally crass commercialistically, if you are excited about what we're doing here, flameonshow.com, you can find all of our cool stuff. We have a lot of content coming. We appreciate any and all Patreon support because that definitely keeps the lights on and potentially funds future episodes and trips to wherever people want us to be. in the world.
But what if I'm not getting enough oral in my life?
If you're not getting enough oral
it's
in your life.
It's called manhunt. No, it's not.
How dare you?
Whoa.
How dare you?
Sorry. Craigslist.
Squirt, okay?
Oh.
Recon. Because he likes to be Canadian.
Craigslist.
Damn. Wait, Squirt's Canadian?
Yeah, they're based out of Canada.
I had no idea.
Wow. You can't find. You can buy me on one of those, but I won't say which one. You can totally find me at Stupid Popcast. That's stupid with two O's and Popcast with a P. Uh-huh. Or you can totally hear me on this channel.
Oh, really?
Doing Dragon's New Spandex. Or you can read my comic book reviews on SciFiPulse.net.
They have been.
Why? Because .nets are still cool.
They have been very entertaining and very informative, so good job.
Thank you. Just recently, I did a Jessica Jones one. Newsflash, she's the Casey Anthony of the Marvel Universe.
Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
I actually really liked that first issue. Mm-hmm. It was super cute.
Yeah.
And super self-aware of, like, everything going on
mm-hmm.
in all of the books.
Bendis is, yeah.
So, yeah, with that, totally find me because I'm doing a lot of things, even though the universe saw fit to crush my hopes and dreams
Atlanta. If you're going out to Sawmill on either of the upcoming weekends, or we'll be hosting Barrioke on the 22nd and 29th.
No pressure. Will also be hosting at the Parliament House when you go back up to New York.
On October 27th.
Yes. So,
no pressure.
Find me. I'm Ooh. Here. I'm there. I'm everywhere.
He'll be creeping out of a hotel room.
Oh.
Bear bust weekend.
I want to see you out of a cabin at Sawmill. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Oral on the trails. that could be a whole multi-part series.
I'm not going to lie.
Wait, is that like Oregon Trail? Oral on the trail?
Yeah, but instead of getting dysentery, it's chlamydia.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So, well, super syphilis.
Super. And I'm sure there's a lot of oral on that trail.
But, you know, I'm sure Sawmill is a lovely place. I'm not an outdoorsy sort of gay, but I'm excited to see it. I've always heard of it, never been.
Sawmill's not a very outdoorsy kind of campground.
Oh, thank God.
It's pretty bougie.
Lots of bars.
It can be if you're sleeping in a tent on the ground and there's shit tons of caterpillars everywhere.
Setting up.
I lived through that.
Singing songs.
Well, caterpillars.
Waving at people, packing up, walking around and leaving. Say hello, then leave him.
You should post pictures
walking
of your
adventures.
Have a drink, then leave him.
Just one drink.
This one drink.
Well, walking around and then leaving.
All of this can be seen and documented copiously on FlameOnShow.com or on Facebook, Flame On Show, Twitter, Flame On Podcast, and I don't know, Tumblr, Instagram, all these other places.
Still need to give me that login for Tumblr.
I know. We'll figure it out. Anyway.
We're scared of what's going to get posted.
Seriously?
You
I'm
should
a little
be.
Worried.
It's fair.
But thank you guys for listening. Again, Flame On Show. You know how to find us. You found us on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud or wherever the hell else podcasts are found. Thank you for listening and Flame On.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. Flame On was created by Brian Pittard and is engineered by Pat O'Rourke. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Flame on all your favorite social networks. You can follow us at Flame On Podcast on Twitter or Flame On Show on Facebook and Tumblr. Or you might even see some of us on your favorite gay hookup apps. Just keep an eye out. If it's gay and geeky, we've got you covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.